Welcome to an extra episode of Phlegmatic Blood Moon, with bonus material in the form of an interview with Mansoor Hosseini, who created the music for the podcast. Since there's not all that much information on Mansoor available online, and since he, like Shadi Bezeghi, was originally a refugee from Iran, I thought that it might be interesting to learn a little bit more about his background and the way he approached creating the music for the project. Yeah, one of the things I've been, of course, very curious about is your background, like Shadi, coming from Iran. And as I understand it, you've been living in Sweden for many, many years. And you've studied in Paris and Brussels and quite European education, as many composers have had. But from what I can gather, you probably were you also a refugee, like Shadi, from Iran at a young age, a fairly young age? Or?
Yes, my family came to Sweden when I was 17. Even before that, we were sort of a refugee because, well, as a kid, my family went to England, but then we went back to Iran. But there was so many problems there, of course, with the regime. And we went to Dubai. I continued to study English there, English school. So we couldn't go back to Iran. So I lived in Dubai when I was from 12, 13. And then at 17, we had to decide, do we stay there or not? But we moved to Sweden, also as a refugee, I guess. Yeah, and I became some years later a Swedish citizen and been living there since. Although in between to study music, I was in Paris 7 years. I was in Brussels for almost 2 years.
Yeah, you had quite a thorough European composition background. There are all kinds of things that I'm curious to ask about that, but just to stick with the beginnings in Iran, is that something that you feel is still very present in your life today? That background, now of course you're well established in Sweden and have had many years of a career.
Well, more and more as you grow older, also because you. But since I was small, as I explained, I left Iran. But when I ended up in Sweden and you start to study music and you wonder about the culture in your background, about the poetry there. So I became more and more curious. And it was then, actually, it was in Sweden I started learning Persian.
Okay.
My Persian language was not good at all. I even spoke, when I spoke to my parents, I had a British accent speaking Iranian, so that was very strange. So yes, the more years passed, the more curious I got learning and knowing about the poets in Iran, the older poets especially, which I tried to use a few times in the piano and song pieces I wrote and similar projects.
Right. Yeah, the recorder concerto that you wrote a few years ago also had a very directly Persian theme with the bird.
I think maybe I wasn't intentionally trying to do that. Actually, the voice of the singer was very much inspired by a very specific story in Japan, this war and these bombs and stuff like that. But I guess you are right in a way, because a lot of things I'm doing unconsciously has some nostalgic theme that sounds like a Persian melody.
I was surprised Shadi mentioned somewhere, I think in some interview, that for her the Persian language was very very soft and and poetic and round, and that she experienced Danish as being a much more clear and hard language. And that's surprised me, because I always think of Danish as being incredibly soft and round, and compared to German, for example, which is much more defined. So I don't know the Persian language at all, but that surprised me that there could be something that was even softer and gentler than Danish. From my experience. Once again, going back to those beginnings, one thing is the language and the those cultural aspects such as stories and myths. What about instruments? Because in the music that you composed for the podcast, one can clearly hear that there is, on the one hand, the electronic sounds, all the modern sounds that we're used to. On the other hand, there is a reference to something that's more traditional. I was curious about, is that some kind of memory of the music that you perhaps grew up with, or is that again something that you've perhaps rediscovered?
Right. I think both of it, because I sort of have memories of, I was born in south of Iran, so by the Persian Gulf, where the music sounds 90% like African music, the rhythms, the 6-8 rhythms, a lot of percussion and a lot of flute, and maybe some effects and influences from Portugal indirectly, because the Portuguese came there 150 years ago at the harbor, working there, bringing, you know, the ships coming, bringing products. I got a little bit off track maybe, but the instruments, I have some memories of the instruments that I heard. And then later on, as I mentioned before, it's the same story here. I was more and more curious about the instruments, and I tried playing some of them, some of these string instruments, some of the percussions. So it was both the memories I had that made me curious after some years to try and to use some of them. Maybe live or just some recordings, and the things that I learned later, like some percussive string instrument called santur, I learned about later, so I tried that too.
Yes, it's both
difficult to play, but
if we look a little bit further back in your beginnings after you'd moved to Sweden and began to study music and be active as a musician, I was very interested to see that there's also a very strong dance background and an interest in improvisation, where you also yourself have taken part as a dancer. I was curious about where that interest came from and how that came to full as much as it did.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely not a dancer, and I don't think I ever tried to be. But what you're maybe referring to, which I understand, is movements I did a lot of, whether I was doing theater projects or music and dance projects. And I do a lot of dance projects, actually. I just came back from Berlin from a dance festival where I played the music. But it was mainly martial arts I was interested in as a sport, Kung Fu to be precise. Okay. And for me, some of the movements were so beautiful that it's almost like a dance. And that's how I started being interested in movements, I guess you can say, which I used sometimes with the musicians I was working with, when improvising, or even when I, you know, notated scores, I would write movements on the partitura, on the score, for the musicians to exaggerate movements, etc. And I did same things when I was on stage improvising. I just love, I think as a musician, I was very, very much interested in watching conductors move their hands. It was so beautiful. Or even when the violin player or the pianist is using the arms and the hands, it's so beautiful. It's like a dance.
Yeah. it's an important part of the experience. And I read that you also studied film music, which fits in very well with this interest in a kind of the whole picture.
Absolutely. I mean, it's also a visual, I guess it's the visual part of, which is the opposition of sound, right? Sound is not visual, yeah. But the other part I'm very interested as well, whether it's music, music theater, movement of hands, as I described, or film. I found that fascinating. I guess when I'm just writing even a traditional composition, let's say I do a string quartet, I'm very much thinking visually of each instrument as four characters in a film or in a story. So
you studied with George Afegis, which also has, he also has a lot of this strong tradition of a kind of not music for theater, but a music that is theatrical in its essence.
Absolutely, that's exactly. Yeah.
And for many years, you also had a group, an ensemble that what was called Temus, I think, that actively had a focus on this kind of presentation of music.
Yeah, we still have a famous ensemble. We actually we haven't done much in the last 2-3 years, but we have a project end of the year. So there is the same thing. We're 3, sometimes 4 musicians, but very often we don't have music instruments on stage.
Right.
So we do movements with our body and hand and play on an amplified table. I did a solo dance with a computer, with a laptop. I was dancing with a laptop at the same time playing rhythm on it, of course. And then I smashed the laptop into pieces on stage. It's this visual and the sound of non-instruments we were interested in.
Right. You've got all these different paths in your musical career: theater, dance, film, also just traditional concert music, and you've, on the one hand, had this interest in improvisation, on the other hand, teaching notation, which I guess is a specific form of notation that, as you were explaining earlier, can communicate more of the movement aspects. Where do you, after all these years of paths that have gone in different directions, where do you find your focus now after this strange year that we've had?
I don't know. I guess I have a very huge split personality, maybe, because with Temus, we do something completely different, or maybe some, it's improvisation, but also visual. If I write music for music theater projects, it can become graphic, which is a combination of graphics and my improvisation background, which you named in the beginning. And my improvisation background comes from my Persian culture background.
Right.
I have my, let's say, more traditional and European side, which is the
notation. Which is
normal notation. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Writing for ensembles.
Where I am today, I really don't know. It just depends what project comes up and if I managed to do that.
Right. To come back to Iran, I was just yesterday, I actually saw a little exhibition called The Other Iran, which was where there were some beautiful photographs of, showing something, a side of Iran that perhaps not many of us are very familiar with, that there is that there are alternative cultures alive and well, even though the regime is quite strict or restrictive, however one should put it. That was very interesting for me to see these photographs of very colorful people with interests. Do you still have connections to people in the country or any of those subcultures?
I do. I still have like two or three cousins in Iran, in the south, and also through my mother or my uncle, I hear some news or I hear about a certain film that came out. And I have a cousin who made a film actually about a musician from the south, and this film became it won a prize in Canada, and I don't know what. So I have some connections and I try to stay updated.
Right. Yeah, it's quite interesting how sometimes these very difficult conditions can inspire people it makes it even more important for them to keep their artistic explorations alive, given the restrictiveness of the everyday culture.
Absolutely, because if you don't, then you lose a certain thing from your from the older poets, or you start, because this generation might not have the possibility to listen or read certain things, and if nobody does anything, you start forgetting what other people did. I mean, even in Europe, I've been teaching kids from 7 to 18 year olds, and some of them never heard of Mozart. Like I said, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's okay if they haven't heard the music. They still have time. They never heard of who, or they, so I had to try to explain to them, so this is Europe, right? So imagine how it is in Iran with their own important poets, etc.
Yeah, it's important to keep these things alive, by reinventing them, reprocessing what they mean for us today. Even though the poets are ancient in many respects, sort of finding modern day interpretations
I mean. Like we mentioned, I spent 7 years in Paris studying and working. So I know that over there you have, and this is just Paris, not even the rest of the France, I don't know. But you have more of Persian culture in Paris.
Okay.
I mean, that is allowed to come out than in the whole of Iran. It's not allowed, or there's no possibility, or other reasons, maybe resources, money, I don't know.
Right.
It is getting better. I heard in Tehran there are contemporary music festivals. There are great. I actually have German and Swedish friends who were invited to go there, and they played music, and they really enjoyed it. So there are a lot of things, but you cannot advertise it, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting to hear. I'm just thinking of one of the, I don't know if I can show it to you, one of the pictures that I saw yesterday, where one of the characters looks totally like Frank Zappa.
Wow, you see that? Yeah, I'm a big Frank Zappa fan, actually.
I don't know if you can see it, but Oh. I don't know, it just reminded me of
I mean, already, and this is a very funny thing, about, we're talking 15, 20 years ago, I was in a museum, World Culture Museum in Gothenburg, Sweden, where I live. So the theme was music and oppressed music, you know, band music. And over there, you had headphones and pictures of underground rock groups from Iran, for example, different parts. And they were amazing. They were great because, you know, they had a lot of fantasy and it was great music and things I never heard of before from there, you know. So I guess things do exist. They just, you just got to find them.
It's really fascinating to, to get a little bit of a little more insight into things that one just doesn't think about or doesn't really imagine even exist. I suppose, especially a place like Iran has, in terms of the West, just been, it's like, one thinks like North Korea or something just pushed away in a corner and one has no idea what's going on. So it was fascinating with the exhibition to just get a little glimpse of all the life, very colorful life that there apparently is still existing there. And of course, with you and Shadi and putting together the piece, the podcast piece, that's not directly, doesn't directly have to do with Iran, but as with Shadi's words, I suppose one has definitely this feeling of that background. In one of her interviews, she mentions that she also came to Denmark at quite a young age, but this experience of war is something that she has with her. And that's, of course, very clear in her texts that, that one's aware of, this aspect of life, which normally in Denmark we're quite protected from or can quite happily live in our bubble without having to think about it too much. But, and with your music as well, there is, perhaps something of a mood that supports her words very, very well, and sort of fills out the emotional space around them. Is there something specific you could tell us about how you approached the podcast project? Was the music something specifically intended for those poems, or is it more a general?
It is intended and made especially for Shadi's poem. I mean, as you said, it's about war. It's very political. It's quite direct, but in a poetic way, and it's about trauma and tension and the effect of war. And I think what I took from that for the music is the tension and after effect of any trauma or war or anything, any negative incident. But instead of doing too much or doing anything dramatic with the music, or imitating the words, I instead try to actually make things calmer with the music and make it a little bit nostalgic, which is what we talked about before, through the slow flute sounds or the string sounds. Because I didn't think the moment of war where it's loud, it's chaotic, it's terrible. I didn't think of that. I thought of after the war,
when
the dust and the smoke going out. It's calm, but it's still, you know, it's still terrible. So those nostalgic feelings.
Right, yeah. I also, that was very much also the way I experienced, especially as we have it set up now with there's a long section at the end where not very much happens. For me, that feels sort of very dystopian, this, some kind of aftermath after the event where there's not much left. There's just this single note that that pulses, keeps on pulsing, and there are some small melodies and things, but it's quite desolate in its mood. And I suppose there is there's definitely a sense of a mood of of loss and what have we done? The crazy ways in which governments have acted, and also the sense of that we were facing an environmental crisis, and that the earth is paying the price for our insanities.
I mean, that part was actually what I also thought of, and it's why there was these, I have a lot of repetitive, simple, sometimes percussive or bells or something that is just ping, you know, you have that throughout the music, and it's like a time bomb ticking, you know, meaning, okay, what's going to come next, you know, is something more going to happen now?
Right.
It's calm, but you know, there's tension, and that's what's going to happen to Earth, to us. Or it doesn't have to be here in the poem. It's a big scale, and it's the big subject of war here or there. But it can be in a smaller scale in somebody's life, you know.
Right.
That's, I always try to take things in smaller daily life things.
Yeah, I think that's also something that comes off across quite clearly in Shadi's texts, is that she also always anchors these sort of bigger picture reflections in very personal experiences, to do with the body, to do with very intimate, direct personal experiences, so that big picture always gets anchored in the here and now, and sometimes quite difficult personal things.
Yeah, the subject of trauma and the body and all these things are in her poems, which is very interesting. And you know, it helped me find these sounds and put the music together.
Great. Yeah, that's really nice to get a little bit more of a picture of all the things that are behind it. Is there anything else you'd like to mention,
no, I think we covered the main things, and it was difficult circumstances, because I couldn't, we did meet, of course, just at the beginning of the lockdown. It was March 2020, right?
Right, yeah. It's taken a while to come together, because there were exactly as you say, there were the lockdown, and then that sort of slowed things down very much. But
I mean, maybe in a way it helped us both to think about the structure of it, but it was also difficult, I think, for everyone to do project in distance, you know, and. Because I could have played some sounds. It's not as easy when you know, she could have read things and I could have played live with some instruments, and we could have experimented more ideas, but we just had to deal with
it. Yeah. And one thing that I was curious about was, you've written a lot of music in which you notate and write music for real musicians. But this project was, of course, very much an electronic one. And I was just wondering about, this is just purely on a sort of composer technical level, how it's been for you, that those different ways of working, either working with the electronic sounds, either recreations of traditional instruments or directly electronic sounds that are just purely electronic in themselves, or the process of writing for an ensemble, or
in normal cases, if I want to use electronics, I would try to record as much as I can acoustically, you know, to make it electroacoustic later or do something. But in this case, I was actually in a lockdown.
Right.
I wasn't even at home, so I didn't have my piano or guitar or any. I had one drum, and I did have one instrument. So it's a mixture, but most of it is electronic sounds that I found here, there, or sounds that I had recorded, smaller sounds that I had to layer it, you know, superpose it on other electronic sounds so that it doesn't become typical that sound. I wanted, you know, to hide it. But what I found was that because I was so limited, it made things a bit easier actually, right, because I didn't have a voice.
Freedom, the classic freedom within constraints, that the limitations can be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you, maybe you're limited in the body of material you can use, but you can still, it can make you more creative in structure or the sound. I mean, I talked about rock music in Iran or music in general. They're limited. I mean, I'm not sure you can buy electric guitar there. But anyway, because they're limited, they have to be more creative with the music itself.
Right.
And if we talk about Russia 60 years ago, I don't know what, I have a friend, an older friend who was in Russia. He said, I went to this factory, broken down factory place, and I didn't think, you know, there will be anything there. But there was this solo musician, this Russian guy, who did the amazing work on the junk instruments, on pipelines and broken bricks and whatever. He did a one-hour solo that I never forget.
Right.
So, yeah. Well,
it also makes me think of the Tarkovsky films, where there was a lot of inventiveness in terms of the soundtracks, which are today classics, masterpieces.
Exactly. I mean, you can have the opposite. You can have these terrible action films from Hollywood, who has like music from beginning to end, and it's orchestra, and it's just mumbo jumbo. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be so loud. It shouldn't be there even. It's just to cover the image because the story is not good enough.
Right.
So it can be like that as well.
And on the other hand, Tarkovsky.